From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. And then there were 10. The word is firmly out tonight. Tomorrow in Little Rock, Arkansas, Wesley Clark will announce he's throwing his helmet into the ring for the Democratic presidential nomination. 3 months ago, when General Clark was a guest on this program, I asked him what would go into making a decision to run.
I think it ultimately comes down to a question of what's the best way for me to make a contribution. I'm not a politician. I didn't come from a political family. I don't have an independent financial base. It's about what's the best thing for me to do. I'll just have to think it through.
Wesley Clark's 11th hour candidacy throws a huge new factor into the Democratic lineup. The retired four-star general and former NATO Supreme Commander has never run for public office, and he's raised only $1.5 million. Howard Dean should be at $20 million by the end of the month. Clark's military record isn't quite that of Eisenhower, Grant, or Colin Powell. But in a campaign that hinges on national security and where there's no anointed Democratic frontrunner, Wesley Clark's spit-polished credentials and plain talk have won him supporters even before a candidacy. Tonight on Point, General Clark marches into battle for the American presidency. Joining me now from Little Rock, Arkansas, is John Linko, founder of DraftWesleyClark.com, an online campaign to draft the retired general to run for the Democratic nomination. John Linko, I guess you got what you were looking for, or are about to.
That's the word. I mean, until I hear from the general himself, you know, I don't know for sure, but, you know, I got to say, as word is leaked out, it's looking very good for tomorrow.
John Linko, it is late in the day. What makes you think Wesley Clark can win?
Well, you know, if you look at this guy and you ask yourself, what should a president be like? What should a president look like, sound like? What kind of credentials should he have? You know what? This guy comes very close to fitting the bill of the president we were promised as kids. So it's late, but you know what? He's a heck of a candidate, and when people get to know him, they not only become supporters, they become evangelists.
Okay, every candidate has pluses and minuses. What do you put in the plus column for Wesley Clark?
Well, in the plus column, God, you know, it was a two-hour show, three-hour show.
Give us the highlights because that's all the people get.
I think, in all seriousness, what's really astounding is that there are highlights across the spectrum, and I'll give just the top ones. National security experience, just unparalleled. This man not only knows how to wage war, he knows how to wage peace, which I think is much more important. And he knows that making the nation safer is not just about dropping bombs. This man led a true coalition in an actual war, the only war NATO has ever fought.
You're looking at Kosovo, 1999, when he was head of NATO forces in Europe.
Exactly. And unlike the two wars this president has fought, we actually caught the bad guy in that one, Slobodan Milosevic. He's now on trial. And we did it without a single American casualty. Now, look, wars can be different, but the point is he actually made a plan, and he made a plan for not only the war itself, but for the post-war period.
So you're putting him up against the commander-in-chief of the war in Iraq, the war in Afghanistan, the war on terror, and saying he's got the stripes to stand up to that, to face Bush on that plane.
Well, I think he certainly does. I mean, you know, George Bush, I think his military experience was, from what I understand, it was landing on an aircraft carrier. I mean, Wesley Clark, not to disparage the commander-in-chief, but the reality is Wesley Clark served for 35 years, and he led NATO forces. And I think what's important about leading NATO forces is it means he's not just a general who was on the battlefield. He's a general who had to liaise with heads of state, with folks from other nations.
And he's been very critical of U.S. policy in Iraq.
Well, I mean, I think he's, as he's correctly pointed out, no one seems to know if there is a policy. I mean, we went in and, you know, we were, you know, apparently astounded that, you know, things were going to happen the day after the bombing stopped, you know, the day after the war ended, that, you know, there were still battles to be won on the field of peace.
And what about the negative column? What boxes do you have to check? You're a political consultant. You're looking at this guy. He's coming in. It's almost the end of September. What's he got pushing against him?
Well, I mean, I think there's no doubt that coming in late is it's going to make it tough. I mean, I think he's got a strong advantage in that there has been this draft movement unaffiliated with him, you know, led by DraftWesleyClark.com, and I think what's great about that is he now has tens of thousands of volunteers ready to serve, and he's got $1.5 million in pledges. So it's a start, but there's no doubt there's a lot of catching up to do and to do it very quickly.
John Linko, Wesley Clark was first in his class at West Point. He spent a lifetime in the military. He's trained as a general to be a strategist. He's choosing this date. He's choosing, September 17th. So what's the – is there a strategic reason? Why did it take him so long if he wanted to do this?
You got me. I think – I mean, to be quite honest, I really did take him at his word. I mean, I, you know, met with him a couple of weeks back for the first time, and we talked it through, and he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, look, I have not made a decision yet. And I really do honestly believe that, you know, he had to look at this in a very methodical way and say, well, let me talk to my family, let me talk to my strategist, let me accurately gauge whether or not there is, in fact, a there. You know, is there a campaign to be run? Can I win? You know, and I think that's what any good general is going to ask himself. Is there, you know, can I go in and win? Otherwise, you know, let's not fight this battle. And I think he ultimately determined, I think it was as late as yesterday, that this is a battle that can be won.
You've got political experience yourself. What's the game plan? Can Clark build an infrastructure? Other candidates have been out there for a long time, building grassroots infrastructure, campaigning already, getting their people in place. Is this going to be a kind of top-down campaign? Does he have time to build it from the bottom up?
I think, you know, all indications we're getting, and again, only the general could say for sure, but all indications we're getting are very much that there's, you know, an incredible awareness that this draft movement has done something unparalleled in American history. It's brought a guy to 9% in the polls who's not even running. And so I think there's a strong recognition that this has to incorporate the draft movement in a big, big way as part of the formal campaign. So, you know, again, it's up to the general to decide, but that's certainly the indications we're getting.
Can he raise enough money quickly enough? The running is expensive.
Yep, he certainly can. I mean, I think there are two things to that. I mean, number one, I think he doesn't have to raise as much money. You know, a Yugo might take $100 million to sell, but a Rolls-Royce sells itself. People love this guy. Once they get to know him, they really become passionate supporters. But number two, he's got two advantages here. Number one, grassroots forces that are very strongly, they're passionate about this guy. I mean, DraftRussellClark.com is the second most trafficked website of all the presidential candidate websites. And, you know, he's winning or he's coming close on the modem, the, quote, modem primary, and that will translate into grassroots support in the funding. But number two, I think even more important, there's a strong recognition that this guy can not only take back the White House, he can take back the other two houses as well. He's got the four-star coattails that could give us the Senate and the House. So a lot of institutional support is going to come forward real quickly. I say keep an eye on Congress, and you'll see some people coming out real, real quickly in favor of Wesley Clark.
John Linko, you've been driving this bandwagon to draft Wesley Clark. Now it looks like he's going to enter the race. What got you behind him in the first place? Are you an old classmate from Little Rock or a brother-in-law?
Well, I'm not that old. It really came down to just, back in March, I just took a real look at the field, and I said, you know, there are some great people in this field. I was fortunate enough to meet Howard Dean. He's a very good man, a great candidate. But, you know, I didn't want just great. I wanted the president I was promised as a kid. I wanted someone who I knew could beat Bush and someone who I knew should beat Bush. You know, someone who could sort of, you know, dig out that idealism buried under years of cynicism. And when I looked at this guy and I read through his record, my heart and my head told me the same thing. This was the guy. And, you know, as I talked to more and more people, I realized that as people get to know him, there was a similar epiphany, and people realized that this guy would make one heck of a president. And so I started driving the movement, and it started taking off by itself, and now I'm doing it full-time. And me and, 50, 100,000 of my closest friends are driving it together.
And give us your quick prognosis. When do you think, once he's in the race, that he'll pull abreast of the other leaders in the race? How quickly? Of course, you're a supporter. Of course, you believe he can do it.
Yep.
How quickly? Or is it a line that goes straight up, or is it a slow march here?
I think it's a slow but steady march. I think he is the, I don't know if it's the tortoise that wins, maybe the tortoise, but one heck of a tortoise. I think, you know, it will be slow and steady, but once people become supporters, their support is incredibly strong. So, you know, I am certain that once the convention comes around, he will be number one. How long it takes him to get to number one, not quite sure.
You're in Little Rock tonight. That's where the announcement will be at 1 p.m. tomorrow. What's the mood there?
The mood is just, you know, ecstatic. There are a lot of us draft folk here, and, you know, there's nothing like looking at the guy that, you know, you've been trying to make president for the last 6 months and, you know, getting, again, not the definite word till tomorrow, but certainly getting, you know, clearly encouraging signals. And, you know, you just suddenly realize that you've won your battle. And if nothing else happens, at the very least, we've given America a choice.
John Linko in Little Rock, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me.
John Linko is founder of DraftWesleyClark.com. He spoke with us from Little Rock, Arkansas. Listeners, you can join this conversation tonight. What's your reaction to Wesley Clark's now impending candidacy? Does this blow up the Democratic pecking order? Does it put the president on the run? What's the Wesley Clark appeal? Why all the anticipation around a retired general who's never run for office? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Celinda Lake, one of the country's leading Democratic pollsters. She's president of Lake, Snell, Perry & Associates, a political strategy firm. Good evening and welcome back to On Point, Celinda Lake. Good to have you. Hello, Celinda. Are you there?
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. Look out on this changing scene, changing beneath our feet tonight. All signs now that Wesley Clark will declare his candidacy tomorrow. Why do you think he's decided to do it now? Why has he waited so long?
Well, I think that he was waiting to see how the war turned out, and I think that he is a very, very knowledgeable observer, obviously, of the war and the post-war. And while I'm not privy to any of his calculations, I think it was actually a very good move. I also think that he is, because he hasn't run for office before, he often reflects feelings much like the voters reflect. And the voters never think that the campaign started too late. They tend to think of them as starting too early.
Mm-hmm. So when you say he was watching the war, the general, the strategist, you believe is watching how things turned out, seeing if they have gone badly enough to give him a clear opening? Is that
no,
the idea?
No, I think more that he had serious reservations about it, and I think that, you know, he's been very clear about his critiques from the get-go. But I think that he probably was watching to see how the war and the post-war period turned out to see if his critiques were right. And as it's turned out, his critiques and the critiques of many others in the Democratic Party have been absolutely right.
Talk to us about the people who are gathering around Wesley Clark, I guess even today in Little Rock. Some big names from the Democratic side of the aisle: Donald Fowler, former chairman of the Democratic National Committee; Eli Siegel, former Clinton administration official, leader of Clinton's 92 campaign; Ron Klain, strategist for Al Gore; Mark Fabiani, communications specialist for Clinton and Gore. What does that roundup of figures tell you about what elements of the Democratic Party are rallying here?
Well, I think that Wesley Clark has a lot of appeal, and I think that in some ways he has appeal in many of the camps in the Democratic Party. On the one hand, there are obviously a lot of people who were involved in Clinton and understand the kind of insurgent campaign. On the other hand, there he has a real appeal to the anti-war faction of our party. And then I think he also has appeal to the people who have talked about the Clinton people who talked about doing it a third way, really, and a way that combines that can't be easily defined as either left or right. And he's a very powerful combination of that. And, you know, as people also get beyond his policies just on the war, he's been quite articulate about renewing the assault ban, about universal health care, and there are a number of policies that he's support for affirmative action that he's articulated in a new way that I think can really be heard in a powerful way by the voters. So I think he's a very powerful addition to the team, and it strengthens the whole Democratic message right now. I think he'd be a powerful presidential candidate. I think he'd be a very powerful vice presidential candidate, too.
We hear that he has met 4 times with Howard Dean. The Dean, I don't know who would pop the question, but no one's popped the question about vice presidency to this point. If he announces tomorrow as expected, do you assume that he's genuinely going for the top slot? Is there maneuvering here, and who might hitch up with whom?
Oh, I'm sure he's genuinely going for the top slot. I think all the candidates are generally going for the top slot. But I think a Dean Clark ticket is a very powerful ticket.
You say Dean Clark, not Clark Dean.
Well, that would be a powerful ticket, too.
And when he announces tomorrow, do you agree with John Linko that the 4 stars that sat on his shoulder all those years put him directly into the debate with George Bush over national security? Is he the only Democratic candidate who can succeed on that plane, on that issue?
I think actually all of the candidates are in direct debate with the president on national security. But what I think is very powerful about General Clark is that he brings another voice and credibility to this critique for the entire ticket. And that is why I'm, you know, very pleased and very proud that Clark is a Democrat, because he is saying, from his very knowledgeable perspective, the same things that a number of other Democrats have been saying. And I think our ticket has many of our candidates who agree with this perspective. But he obviously brings incredible gravitas to the position. And it's a great day when Clark is a Democrat.
Celinda Lake, stand by. We'll come back and test the proposition. We're talking tonight about General Wesley Clark jumping into the race for the presidency. What's your reaction? Have you been waiting for candidate Clark? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about impending candidate Wesley Clark, who is set to enter the Democratic race for president tomorrow in Little Rock, Arkansas. General Clark was a guest on this show in June. Here's what he had to say about President Bush's foreign policy.
Essentially, the policy's been reactive. We went after Afghanistan. We took out the Taliban. I believe the war in Iraq was an elective war. I never saw the justification and the urgency of going after Saddam Hussein. I'm proud of the men and women who fought. They obviously had to believe in themselves and their mission, and I supported them in doing that. I think the outcome of that is not clear. Success hasn't been attained yet. We don't have the weapons of mass destruction. And so I think the policy outcome remains in doubt there, and there's not a clear strategy that puts all this in a larger context and takes us forward in a way that all Americans can understand and support.
Wesley Clark, just 3 months ago, with us on Point, talking about Bush administration foreign policy. Tomorrow at 1 p.m., he is scheduled to stand up in Little Rock, Arkansas, his hometown, 58 years old, and declare his candidacy for the U.S. presidency. He will be the 10th Democratic candidate with a hat or a helmet in the ring. What do you think? Does this blow up the Democratic pecking order? And why all the anticipation around a retired general who's never run for office? What's the Wesley Clark appeal? And is it too late for a serious Clark run? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined tonight by Celinda Lake. She's a Democratic pollster, president of Lake Snell, Perry & Associates in Washington. And we're joined now from Washington by Noam Scheiber. He's associate editor at The New Republic. He's been keeping tabs on Wesley Clark in an online blog on The New Republic's website. Good evening and welcome, Noam Scheiber.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
It's great to have you. Noam, we're hearing a lot of excitement tonight from Wesley Clark backers who are delighted to see him entering the race, and from Celinda Lake, a Democratic pollster who says she's proud to have him in, proud to have him as a Democrat. You're not quite as enamored. You've found some flaws in the spit polish here. What do you see, Noam Scheiber?
I'm a little skeptical, but before I get into that, I would say that I would like nothing more than for Wesley Clark to be a strong candidate, and I think if he emerges the Democratic nominee, having gotten through the primary process, he might very well be a very strong candidate to take on George W. Bush. But I'm just not convinced that the numbers add up. I think it's an incredibly long shot for really two reasons. The first is the dynamic that has emerged in the Democratic primary now is that there's a sort of there's Howard Dean is the kind of de facto front runner, and the other candidates are all vying to be, for lack of a better term, the anti-Dean.
Mm-hmm.
And really, you have a number of candidates who all can sort of hold out hope that they will be able to fill that anti-Dean slot. The problem for Clark is, as long as all of those other candidates think that they have a shot at filling that slot, they suck an enormous amount of oxygen out of the contest, and it makes it very tough for him to get traction. The second factor that sort of reinforces that is the front-loading of the primary schedule this election cycle. And what I mean by that is several primaries that are normally spread out over the course of 3 or 4 months have been moved up on the calendar so that now you'll have several primaries either happening simultaneously or in rapid succession. And the problem that presents for Clark is that all of these candidates have had to make investments in later primary states fairly early on. In past years, you could sort of test the waters in Iowa or in New Hampshire, and if you did well, then you could subsequently start to build a campaign in South Carolina or Michigan or Arizona. This time around, those investments have had to have been made well in advance. And having made those investments, there's really no incentive for the other candidates not to stick around and see whether the investments pan out. So I just think it's a real long shot in the dynamics don't favor him very well.
So you're looking at the numbers there. What about the man himself? His resume is famous and will be a lot more famous soon. But what about the man behind all the stars and bars and accolades? What's the personality, and does it work as a presidential candidate? It's a different job than being a general.
It certainly is, and I think there's no question that he's really impeccably qualified on national security. I think there are a couple of question marks, though. The first is his personality. If you talk to military personnel, former officers who served alongside of him or subordinates of his in the military, there is a strong sense that he is certainly aloof at best. And, you know, often you hear the characterization of him as arrogant, defensive, elitist. I mean, these are things that that are troubling for someone who's going to have to appeal to voters and whose ostensible appeal to this point has been sort of grassroots. I think it's going to be very difficult if he turns out to be fairly aloof and arrogant to form the kind of bond with voters that he needs.
So, Linda Lake, we've talked with Wesley Clark on this show, and I have to admit, he did not come across as aloof or arrogant. In fact, he was late getting home to the phone. He was talking to us on his cell phone as he you know, ran up the front steps of his house. He in fact came across in that conversation as almost humble. Now, of course, a general is a kind of politician and learns how to modulate his public presentation. What about the personality, the character behind the stars and bars?
Well, I was actually listening to the person, and I certainly respect his judgment. But I kind of agree with you. I mean, my only ability to judge the man is by what I see on television, and I think he's an incredibly media-oriented, photogenic, and appealing candidate because he's a very good combination, I think, of kind of straight talk, common sense, common touch, but authority. So he hadn't actually struck me that way either, and I don't think in his public appearances he struck people that way. I don't know. I mean, there's a certain ethos in the military, as there is in any big institution. I have no idea how he reacted in the military, but I certainly don't think he comes across that way as a candidate.
Celinda Lake, Noam Scheiber, stand by. I want to welcome you to our conversation from Washington. E.J. Dionne, he's a columnist with the Washington Post, senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. His latest book is United We Serve, National Service and the Future of Citizenship. Good evening and welcome, E.J. Dionne.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. E.J., a couple of fronts, first within the party and then with Bush. CNN quotes a Democratic operative in another campaign, another candidate's shop today, saying, Wesley Clark is the Swiss Army knife of American politics. Whichever way you open it, someone gets hurt. Who's helped, who's hurt, as Wesley Clark joins that big phalanx of Democratic candidates?
I think the most obvious ones are your Massachusetts Senator John Kerry, because he now has competition on the military front. John Edwards is potentially hurt because he has competition on the southern front, that there are some important southern primaries, and a lot of Democrats know that they have to be competitive in the South to win the election. I think the paradox is he could also hurt Howard Dean because he is an anti-war candidate, and as you've discussed some already, I think the one of the most striking things about this Clark movement is that he is the second strongest candidate on the Internet. There is a very active web campaign for Wesley Clark. Mm-hmm. They raised $1 million. And I think there are remarkable similarities between the not so much Dean and Clark as people, but between their movements. Both movements really dislike President Bush. The Dean people picked Dean because he was the guy willing to take the fight to the president early, as they saw it. The Clark people say, look, we like this guy because he's got everything, at least on paper, and they think in personality, to defeat the president. So I think at least the three of those are potentially hurt if his campaign takes off. I have a sense that we're going to know pretty quickly if this candidacy has a lot of life. You know, he's going to have a very good early run because, as Noam said, he does have a lot of catching up to do. I thought his analysis was excellent, but I just don't think he is out of it, quite as out of it as Noam thinks, because I think there's so many Democrats still looking around and they haven't fallen in love with anybody yet.
Where do you place Wesley Clark in the spectrum that we've got with the candidates so far? I mean, Howard Dean, though he's got a kind of a moderate background, has positioned himself as the progressive, the lefty candidate, the proud liberal. Where does Wesley Clark fit in? Is he a centrist? And if he is, can he win the primary where Democratic liberals have a lot of sway?
The truth is, I don't think we can place Wesley Clark yet, which may be his advantage. He's kind of the Rorschach candidate. A lot of people see in him what they choose to see in him. Clearly, he was a critic of the war, but a criticism of the war from a former general sounds a little different than criticism of the war from a former governor of Vermont. On domestic policy, I think on some of the certain social issues like abortion, he seems to be very liberal. And I am told that he went to speak to the to AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, and really wowed them that the union guys liked him. So I think he may be have the advantage of being a liberal, but you can't look like a liberal if you're a Southern former general.
227 years of American history, Celinda Lake, and 12 generals as president. It's not a small number. Some of them with very famous names, most recently Eisenhower. How do you think that the military uniform plays right now? Is it a plus, a minus? Is it a neutral? I mean, it gives national security chops. Wasn't so many years ago, though, that people wouldn't have dreamed, many people, of voting for a general.
Well, I think it depends on the times, right? And I think in these times, it's a very powerful message. I think it also depends, and this is where Wesley Clark is unique, and I kind of agree with EJ that he's a bit the Rorschach candidate, but it also interacts with the party, right? The Democrats would never have nominated a pro-war general. That would be impossible. I don't even think you'd get off the ground. And then the third thing is, you know, Republicans may already have those credentials, but Democrats, I mean, our economy is in terrible shape, and Democrats have a very strong economic message. But to get to that message, I think many in our party feel we need credibility on security and the war. And that is not to change our position, but just to articulate our position from a place that will be credible to the voters. And I think, as others have said on this call, an anti-war general is kind of immediately credible on it.
Celinda, EJ, Noam, stand by. A lot of callers want to join us. I want to invite them in. Elaine's calling from Wareham, Massachusetts. Hi, Elaine. You're on the air.
Right. Good evening, Mr. Ashcroft. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure.
And I told the other gentleman on the station that I have been a Dean supporter up until now. I'm a former Vermont native and was very impressed with what he did when I lived there, and would love to see actually a combination of General Clark and Dean.
Well, genetic engineering is making great strides, Elaine. Maybe that's possible soon. But maybe not.
Maybe not. Maybe not this time. I would love to see General Clark as the presidential candidate, and easy for me to say that Governor Dean should consider perhaps a vice presidency.
And why would you put Dean on top in that partnership?
Because I think that General Clark, at this point at least, has the better chance of beating Bush.
Are you saying Clark on top, Dean
Absolutely.
As vice president?
Yes. Again, I would put Clark on the presidential slot, Dean in the vice presidential slot. Not that he would be happy to hear that, I'm sure.
But that's how you'd line it out. Elaine, your phone's breaking up a little, but we've got the point. EJ, what about it? We read that there have been four meetings already between Howard Dean and Wesley Clark. Why?
You wonder if Howard Dean he's clearly a very shrewd politician, and I think he sees the threat of Clark to some of his base. Just that caller, I think, is not alone out there, and he knows he could use the military credentials. So since you can't use genetic engineering with this, you have to have it as a ticket. I was a little surprised that Clark went to so many meetings, because it threatened to undercut the fact that, you know, it was threatened to undercut him, a stand-up independent candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it looked like, is he being indecisive? Is he trying to negotiate something else? But he apparently got through that, and now he's running.
Well, there it is. Noam Scheiber, how do you see this, the Dean-Clark toggle switch here? Does it make sense in terms of the positions these candidates have staked out for a Dean supporter to toggle to Clark? Are they interchangeable in policy terms?
I don't think they're exactly interchangeable. I mean, I think Dean has really become a phenomenon unto himself, and it's not entirely clear that it translates. I think there are the polls in the early primary states like Iowa and in New Hampshire all show Dean leading by certainly in New Hampshire by a surprisingly large margin. In Iowa, he's pulled ahead by a somewhat smaller margin. I think you don't do that just by sort of being having weak support from people who are sort of casually perusing the candidates. I think he's really he's really got some very loyal supporters, and in fact, That's demonstrated best by the fact that every time he seems to have a bit of a tussle with the national media, his fundraising only increases and his grassroots support only seems to increase. So I think Dean really is a sort of a self-sustaining phenomenon. I would think it might be a little bit premature to suggest that those supporters will quickly defect to Clark.
And EJ, Howard Dean has famously garnered a lot of support because of his anger. Because he shows and expresses the anger that the pundits tell us many Democrats feel, and you can hear it very often.
I bet you hear it on your show.
Well, we do hear it now and then. Does Wesley Clark tap into that as well, or is his appeal something different? Is his tuning fork at a different pitch here?
Well, first of all, I agree with Noam. I'm not suggesting that all of the Dean constituency is going to shift in mass. I just think that, you know, when you look at where could Clark pick up some votes, I think there is a piece of that constituency that's available to him precisely because they so dislike Bush that they're willing to shop a little bit more to find somebody they think can beat him. I think this the anti-Bush mood spreads very broadly, and I think it's a mistake to say it's a left-wing mood. It's a very broad mood in the party from moderates all the way over to the left wing of the party. And after all, Howard Dean himself, if you look at his stance on domestic issues, is actually a rather moderate candidate. It was the war that sort of set him apart from the other candidates. I think Dean himself said, look, I don't mind being called a liberal, but I don't think I am one. And I don't think that's just political talk. I think that if you look at his record, that's the case. And that's why Dick Ephardt on in Iowa is actually going at him from the left, criticizing his former positions on Social Security and Medicare.
Alice is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Alice. You're on the air.
Good evening.
Good evening.
John Blinko's use of grassroots support is, you know, highly subjective. I've been trying to get in touch with Mr. Blinko for some time now to ask him some questions. He was dead on when he used the term evangelism because we're being asked to take a lot on faith.
With Wesley Clark. Despite his record, he's got a very public record, Alice.
He's got a very great record on his military history, but I've been to his website and I've read the issue statements, and they aren't issue statements. They are basically comments taken out of context of articles. When it comes to, say, education and social issues, they list a comment where he said that he believes that things should be run the way things are in the military, that everyone's treated equal. They're all a family. I know people who are in military families, and that is simply not the case. I think General Clark lacks a real understanding and empathy of the average person in America.
Do you think he has time, Alice, in the remaining campaign, and it's still a year and more? Does he have time to put himself out there as an empathetic candidate to win your support?
I kind of doubt that he's interested in putting himself out there. It just in the way he's been dragging his feet on this, and really not even coming for. He hasn't even said he's a Democrat yet. He said he votes Democratic. There seems
he
to
finally
be a lot
did,
of,
ma'am.
Yeah, he finally did
about a week ago or so in New York.
Well, I notice a lot of things. There seems to be a lot of manipulation of the campaign. Look, when it comes to Dean, I'm undecided yet. I'm a lifelong Democrat, 44 years old.
But you'd like to know more about these candidates. Alice, thanks for your call. We're coming up on a break here. We're talking tonight about General Wesley Clark jumping into the race for the presidency, scheduled to do that, we are told, at 1 p.m. tomorrow in Little Rock, Arkansas, his hometown. My guest tonight, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post, Celinda Lake, Democratic pollster, and Noam Shiver, associate editor of The New Republic. You can join us as well. What will candidate Clark mean for Dean, Kerry, Lieberman, and the rest? Is the Clark excitement a measure of his strength or the weakness of the rest of the field? And what kind of opponent would Wesley Clark be to George Bush? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about General Wesley Clark, who is set to announce tomorrow that he wants to be your next president. 3 months ago on this show, I asked him point blank his stand on a brace of issues. Affirmative action is before the Supreme Court right now. Are you in favor or opposed?
In favor.
Abortion. Where do you stand on abortion rights?
Pro-choice.
And President Bush's education policy. What do you say?
Fund it. And got to do more to professionalize teachers, help teachers grow, give teachers the respect, the pay that makes their pay equal to the value they give to society.
And last question, we've got 9 Democratic presidential candidates. What do you think of the Democratic field?
I like them. I like John Kerry. He's a friend of mine. I like Howard Dean. I've met with him several times. Bob Graham's been a great friend, especially when I was down in the Southern Command. Joe Lieberman helped me enormously when I was over in NATO. I respect Dick Gephardt. He stood for a lot of important things for America. I've got a lot of great people in the race.
Democratic candidate-to-be Wesley Clark on the stump before he was even a candidate 3 months ago on this show. You can join the conversation tonight. Democratic listeners, might this be your guy? And Republican listeners, does this general stand a chance against the commander-in-chief, President Bush? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight by E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post, Norm Noam Scheiber of The New Republic, and Celinda Lake, president of Lake Snell Perry & Associates, a Democratic political strategy and polling firm. And right now by Sam calling from Richmond, Illinois. Hi, Sam. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Thank you. Well, you know, here we go again. They got 9 candidates. Now they have a 10th. And, you know, it's all bash Bush. With the economy, every one of them seems, you know, let's just raise taxes. This whole tax plan of Bush's is burying the economy. The private sector doesn't want to hear any more about taxes. So that's the economy. With the war, Mr. Clark, you know, here, you know, he's criticizing Bush again. I just heard you replay what he had to say 3 months on your show. Here's a guy who's, you know, a general, 4-star, I believe. You think he would announce a game plan to the public as to how we're going to handle the war if he is elected? He's not doing that. He's taking the same stance on the war as the rest of them are. That Bush, you know, this quagmire we're hearing, it's they have no plan for the war. They have no plan for the economy. And as far as his comment, you just replayed his comment on the education.
Yes.
You know, there was a report, I believe, that was just issued today in USA Today. Out of all the industrialized nations, this country is, I believe, spending like $10,000 per student. And the other countries are spending about $6,000. And they're finding that by the time these kids are entering into their high school years, they're starting to fall, you know, behind the rest of the industrialized nations.
Sam, there's a whole issue there in itself. But let me ask you this then. You're saying it doesn't matter if the Democrat wears or wore a general's uniform. You see him as just one more Democrat in the lineup?
He's just one more in the lineup. You know, if he could stand in front of the American people and articulate what Bush has really done wrong and what he's got to do to change things. Now, Dick Cheney was just on Meet the Press the other day. He answered all the tough questions.
Well, Sam, okay? Stand by. I have a feeling in the next weeks you're going to see Wesley Clark all over the place. But thanks for calling tonight, and let's get some response. E.J. Dionne, what about it? When the president, if he should go head-to-head with Wesley Clark, what does it look like?
Well, first of all, you know, a couple of callers have talked about his positions on issues. People complain a lot about our campaigns being too long, but one of the advantages of a long campaign is that candidates eventually have to be fairly specific about a whole lot of things, and I don't think that Wesley Clark or any of the other candidates is going to get by just criticizing Bush on Iraq. I think everybody's going to have to say, here's what's wrong and here's what I do differently. And I suspect Clark, of all of them, would be especially eager to do that because I think he's going to want to establish early on that the fact that he's a general is not just the fact that he can wear a uniform, but that it gives him a particular expertise. I think it would be a lot of fun to see that debate between Clark and Bush.
But how does the Wesley Clark profile dent or not dent Bush's support? There may be anger among Democrats, but there's also a lot of support for this president among Republicans.
Well, look, we are probably as polarized as a country as we have been in this century politically. That caller was an excellent representative of the Republican base. And there, you know, Bush has rock solid support from somewhere between 40-45% of the country, and they're going to go with him no matter what. So that what you're really talking about, I think, is a smaller group than in the past that might be called persuadable voters. And you've got on the other side a Democratic base that feels just as strongly. So I think the question is, can Bush be beaten? Yes, I think he can be beaten. He's been dropping in the polls lately. If you run him against a generic Democrat, i.e., you know, would you vote for Bush or the Democrat, he's now in the 40% range. But none of these individual Democrats yet has enough strength to beat him one-on-one, but I think that suggests that somebody can win.
And the issue, the issues make a big difference. Personality ultimately does, too, and George Bush won a lot of support for his kind of pugnacious simplicity, even, in the last campaign. What kind of personality do you anticipate, E.J., that General Clark is going to show here? We read, you know, he's got a lot of military kind of bearing, haircut every 2 weeks, swims every day, runs every day, taut and springy. He's taught himself how to walk without a limp in spite of the fact that he lost half his calf in Vietnam and had to teach himself how to shake hands again. I guess he lost part of his, I don't know, thumb muscle in Vietnam as well. But what kind of personality, what temperament?
Well, I think, and Celinda, I'd love to hear on this. She's probably done more polling than any of us has on the subject. But I think in a president, people want some combination of toughness and warmth. They want somebody tough enough because they know the job is tough and that some of these decisions are decisions many of us would not want to make. But at the same time, they don't trust someone if they think that this person is too distant from them, can't understand them. And so I think he, you know, his challenge, you know, I think he can show the toughness part. He automatically gets some points from that from the military background. I think the sort of the warmth and the understanding of the problems of an ordinary person, I think, is what he's going to have to show.
Celinda Lake, how do you see that playing, especially with this swing vote, not the Republican base, not the Democrat true believers, but the ones who will decide? How do you expect that the battle of personalities might play out here?
Well, I think that EJ's right. I think that people do want someone, and someone who will listen to them, too. They're worried a little bit that the military personality might order them around rather than listen to them. So I think that's a trait he's clearly going to have to show on the campaign trail, the common touch and the willingness to empathize. And, you know, people joke about Clinton's, I feel your pain, but people really thought, I could meet this guy in McDonald's. He would listen to me. He would take my problem home. He would appreciate where I was coming from. The other thing that people are really looking for right now is straight talk. They're really sick of politicians, and they believe that nobody delivers on their promises. And for a time of our country being in such crisis, it's sad in some ways and quite surprising how cynical the public is. And so Dean has clearly tapped into that, and I think Wesley Clark will tap into that too. And even as I was hearing you replay his answers, people love someone who will just say, pro-choice.
Yeah,
I don't need all 3 minutes to answer.
Right, here it is. No palaver. Here's my answer. Let's get one more call. Ted's calling from Amherst, New Hampshire. Hi, Ted. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I love your show. It's the best I know in radio.
Thanks, Ted. What's on your mind?
You're welcome. Yeah, first of all, I don't think we should underestimate Howard Dean's win ability over George Bush. I've met the man. He's extremely charismatic, extremely intelligent. I think he'll do great in debates and stuff. So that's just the Howard Dean issue. As far as General Clark is concerned, I like him. I think he's articulate. I think he's going to bring a lot to the debate, and I very much look forward to it. But I don't think that criticism is a policy. And what your former caller had said earlier, you know, there's a lot that we need to learn about where, not just where they stand on criticizing the president, but really what they're going to do when they get into the office.
We've got it, Ted. Our time is short, but we see for you, Clark does not automatically knock Dean out of the box. Noam Scheiber, imagine that debate. If it should come down to that debate, a Clark-Dean debate, and who knows? But if it should, how do they go at each other?
Well, I mean, I think Dean really has to appeal to voters as the policy wonk. Clearly, having been governor of Vermont for 10 years, having been a doctor himself, he has obviously the nod on expertise. Obviously, his signature policy proposal is his health care plan. And I think, to the degree that that Dean has a comparative advantage, he'll have to stress sort of his knowledge of policy detail. I think the opposite point for Clark is that he's got a potentially compelling theme, which is the military background. In the military, Clark has said, everyone has health care. In the military, everyone has education. In the military, we don't discriminate. So there's a compelling organizing principle there. I think he just needs to put a little meat on it. And that's really his challenge. I mean, for example, Clark has a very compelling line, lots of very compelling lines lines about gun control. You know, I own a lot of guns myself, but if you want to fire assault weapons, join the military. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very compelling slogan, but it's not exactly the deepest policy pronouncement in the world.
But he can hold up that alternate universe of the military as maybe the universe that he has mastered and comes from, and it's not such a bad thing to point to. We're out of time, but Noam Scheiber, I want to thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much.
Noam Scheiber, associate editor with The New Republic, and Celinda Lake, great to have you. Thanks so much for coming on. Celinda Lake, Democratic pollster, president of Lake Snell Perry & Associates, and E.J. Dionne, always great to have you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you. Thank you.
Really terrific. E.J. Dionne, columnist with The Washington Post. Latest book is United We Serve, National Service and the Future of Citizenship. You can continue this conversation on our website, onpointradio.org. While there, you can listen to our interview with Wesley Clark from June. In a moment, John Edwards makes his candidacy official. This is On Point. After 9 months of campaigning, Senator John Edwards formally marked the beginning of his push for the presidency today with a speech in Robbins, North Carolina, the small mill town where he grew up. Edwards has done well at fundraising, but he has so far failed to gain major traction with voters, especially in key states with early primaries. And today's announcement was overshadowed by reports that Wesley Clark will join the race tomorrow. In his speech, Edwards criticized President Bush's tax cuts and said, America deserves a president who understands that the people of the country work, and the people of this country work hard. Here is more of John Edwards' formal announcement.
I will be a champion for regular people every single day. I will fight my heart out to bring back America's dream. And together, we will take the power in our democracy out of the hands of that handful of insiders who are running our country today. And we will give it back to you. We will give it back to the American people. This is your country. This is your democracy. You deserve it. And we will give it back to you in November of 2004. We need a different kind of politics that give people solutions, but not empty promises. Americans know that politicians can fight for each other. What they want to know now is they want a leader who will fight for them. That's what they're looking for as President of the United States. This campaign, my campaign, is built on new ideas, but it's built on old values. Hard work, responsibility, a fair shake for all, and a free ride for nobody, including Halliburton and George W. Bush's friends. We'll never get anywhere in this country if we keep offering America the same tired choices for those who say we can have security, we can have liberty, but we can't have both. We can have power, or we can have respect in the world, but we can't have both. We can have a strong defense, or we can have a strong economy, but we can't have both. When I am President of the United States, we will have both. And we need to give every American the chance to build a better life by doing more to keep jobs right here in America, where we need them so badly. And you all have heard it. You know what the Washington crowd will tell you. They'll tell you, oh, I'm sorry that your plant closed. I'm sorry you lost a job. But I'll tell you, we got something for you. We got a job retraining program for you. Retraining for what? To work where? In what job? In what community? We have a responsibility. Instead of giving tax breaks to companies that move overseas, what we ought to do instead is to give tax breaks to companies that will keep jobs right here in America.
Democratic Senator John Edwards formally announcing his candidacy for the presidency earlier today in Robbins, North Carolina. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.